Everybody's working. With that time's yours.
Honestly, it feels sort of like this should be the show that we're doing before the Super Bowl. It feels like we, at this point, like we don't need another bye week. I at least don't need another week to get ready for another Super Bowl, but that's not the case. We're here now just a little over a week away from, as you know, you may be contractually obligated to call it, the big game. And we'll talk about it and all the stories that have unfolded over the course of this week here on Time's Ours. I'm going to remember to introduce us all today. I'm Joshua Briscoe alongside Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser. If you're new to the show, this is not usually how it starts. This is more put together than usual, which is a nice change of pace.
No, it's all good. It's not Super Bowl week just yet. We're just easing into this thing. Slowly rising to the occasion, right, Seth? Yeah, maybe.
Slowly rising. I like that idea, man. I don't have a good response to that, so I've now thrown off what was a very smooth start into me going, I die.
Hey Seth, what were you doing whenever Nate and I were talking? What were you doing, actually? Tell us. Tell the people what you were doing, Seth.
I don't know what you mean.
What were you doing whenever I was introing the show?
I was replying to a tweet by Chris Jones, Josh. Is that what you want to hear?
That's exactly right.
Is that what you
want to
hear?
Yes! I just wanted you to admit that you were responding to a tweet from Chris Jones after we hit record. Like, right at the jump. Were you not expecting the ball?
Yeah, it usually takes a little bit longer. We're not normally a fast break team.
That's true. We will dent the floor with just dribbling, just one at a time.
He heard Chris Jones in row 8 and was like, wait, what? Yeah, man, you do your thing. I got it. Yeah.
Exactly. Someone was in row 8 and I just started staring. Nate threw me the ball. It hit me in the side of the face, but it stayed in bounds.
But we're just going to slowly rise. We're going to slowly rise, you know? It's about getting the next week somehow, some way.
and now, if you're new to the show, this is usually how it starts. We've given you both sort of our fake front and then also the truth behind the curtain. And it usually starts with Seth tweeting during the show because he's just so busy. He's just got to also tweet Chris Jones. I bet he'll respond to you, Seth. I bet I'll text you back. I bet he'll send you a ring if they win it all.
Yeah, that would be surprising. But you know what? Maybe.
You just retweeted yourself, and that was why you responded that way. I have TweetDeck open,
Seth.
Oh,
man.
You were retweeting yourself when I threw it to you.
So this is what happens when people start to get to know each other too well. So my wife has figured out that I don't have a lot of things that I can do that most other people can't. I'm aggressively mediocre in almost all walks of life. One area that I'm blessed is, even if I'm not paying attention, I can usually, while I you know, just kind of stall for 10 seconds or 5 seconds even, I can rewind what just got said to me, catch what's necessary to form some sort of cogent response, and respond. The problem is I have that delay, right, while I'm rewinding it in my head. And my wife has noticed that. And so the moment yes, Josh, you're being actively, like, compared to my wife right now.
I've talked to you more than I've talked to most people in my life over the last several years.
It just happens. And so now she'll hear it in my voice where I'm just like, well, you know, I, and she goes, wait, stop it. Stop rewinding what I'm saying. Stop it. I'm going to say a bunch of words so you can't remember it anymore. And it's a whole lot of fun, but yeah, welcome to Time's Ours.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, listen, this was an intro at least. Show's off the ground, huh? We got the blood pumping? Fine. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened a little bit earlier today. And I will say, honestly, I mean, we've got like a real injury report. We had a theoretical injury report, a real thing that the Chiefs put out. The Chiefs and Bucks both put out a theoretical injury. If we would have practiced today, here's what probably would have happened. A real thing that hit the internet. But we got a real practice today, a real injury report today, real press conferences today. Most of the questions, it seems like, ended up being about Twitter, which seems fitting for how the show started today. But Nate, did anything stand out to you? Seth, stop tweeting!
here's what jumped out to me. It's it's a great time when you've made the Super Bowl and you can just start to be a little more honest than NFL protocol would like for you to be at a podium. And Chris Jones was like, oh, I read everything. And I was like, do you? Uh-huh. Because for $3.99, sir, have you looked at that athletic app? I mean, I'm just saying. So Chris Jones was like, I read everything. Cool. Tyreek Hill was like, I don't really like, I just like competing, even though, like, literally 40.
I will dunk on my grandma, yeah, literally, he said. He said he was playing volleyball with his grandma and got competitive about it.
Yeah.
It very interesting.
And of course, that's in light of what Scotty Miller is saying, which is, you know, the Buccaneers couldn't stay quiet for 3 days? For three freaking days. Scotty Miller says he's faster than Tyreek Hill. Good luck, sir. Somewhere Carlton Davis is still sweating because stop talking. So, look, Patrick Mahomes was like, I guess people were upset that we didn't win by too many points. So, look, it's good to know that when you get to the Super Bowl, you know what? I can't remember the phrase, but like it's starting to get real. Welcome to, I guess, this like weird version of the season where it's just like, hey, you know, we're not gonna be traveling, we're not really in like game week yet, but I listen to everything, I see everything, I read everything, and please say something in the next 7 to 8 days so that I can be even more motivated to win a back-to-back championship. Like, that was kind of the undertone of the message today that didn't include Andy Reid. Andy Reid was like, look, looking forward to the challenge. Nobody's hurt except for Eric Fisher, which you already knew. They're a good team. That was like, Josh, ask me a question.
Are you Andy Reid here? And yes, you know what I call Coach, obviously, you know, you faced this team earlier in the year, and they've really been hot since then. You guys have also, of course. You know, what have you seen from them since that game, and how are you gonna, you know, prepared to take on an evolved version of them in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, thanks, Jess. Look, they're a good team. They're a really good team. I can't say enough how much they're a good team. Close game last time. Glad we won.
Probably buying the cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger. They're a good team.
Coach, real quick follow up. Hey, Brad, can I get one more? Hey, Brad, thanks, Brad. Coach, Eric Bieniemy looks like he's not going to get a head coaching job again this year. David Culley, you know, former assistant, yeah, did. What did you think when you saw, you know, one former assistant got the job, but also, you know, one currently under staff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that he's here, but I'm not happy because he didn't get hired in one of the leadership roles. Look, I'm not gonna say anybody's name in terms of owners, but look, you know, the Texans are a good team.
Coach, are the Texans a good team?
Look, there's a good man down there who's going to gonna do a lot of things, and they're a good team. You know,
they're a good team.
They're professionals. They're a professional team. I'm not going to say anything. Hi, Diana Rossini, good to see you. Good to see you. I'm not going to say anything. They're a good team. Okay, moving forward.
This is
Coach, back here in the back of the Zoom. Hi, are you guys playing the Super Bowl next Sunday?
Yeah, we're looking. We just started practicing again, and you know what can I say? Played them before. We know how good they are. Said that a couple times. He said that a couple times a day. We know how good they are. I'm sure you do, Andy.
Coach, actually, just one more for you. Do you think that Tom Brady is going to be a problem? Do you think he's pretty good?
Look, I've seen a lot of quarterbacks in my day, and
I don't know.
He's a good guy. You know, he's
a good guy.
Okay, he's a good quarterback.
What if we did this for 45. What if we did this for 45 minutes?
Oh my gosh.
Minutes?
Can you imagine the reviews? Oh, they were great until January 28th. 2021. I just think Super Bowl, if you want to know how absurd the, you know, Super Bowl and the NFL are, the fact that they're putting out hypothetical injury reports
is hilarious.
Like, we didn't practice, but had we practiced today, they would have been limited. Or they would have. I mean, that's so stupid. I'm really enjoying this iteration of the Chiefs, which people think is funny right now, but if they keep it up, especially if they win again, people are going to turn on it. Like, non-Chiefs fans, that is. Like, Chiefs fans are going to love it. But non-Chiefs fans are going to get tired of the pettiness real quick. And I am so here for it. They are the villains. They are the bad guys. They just ripped the hearts out of two great fan bases. And laughed while they did it and made the Bills so mad while they did it. And I'm here for it. So it's just fun. Like you said, with the Buccaneers, it's like, man, Scott Miller, like, you, what are you, just, why are you talking? Like, do you think you could beat Tyreek Hill in a foot race? How hard is it to say, oh, I don't know, that dude's pretty fast? How hard is that? Like, this isn't hard. Here, you know what? This could be our theme for the day. Nate, ask me if I can beat Tyreek Hill in a foot race.
You know, Seth, there's been a lot of talk this week about you and Tyreek Hill for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's been weird.
Just your thoughts on what a player he is. And look, there's been speculative, you know, sort of reporting on Twitter by I don't know who, that maybe you guys would, you know, for kickoff get in a race. Your thoughts?
Oh, man, you know, Tyreek Hill is a great player, really good all-around player, deserves every accolade he's gotten, fast guy. I mean, who knows? You know, normally I'd bet on myself against almost anyone, but that guy's real fast. So, you know, maybe one day we'll get to see. Who knows?
So you and Stephon Diggs, right? We can schedule that in 2 weeks?
Yeah, you know, Stephon Diggs, great player.
Great
you know,
player.
Deserves every accolade he's gotten. You know, really good guy. I'd bet on myself against almost anyone, but you know, he's real fast. So who knows, you know, like, this isn't hard. Just caveat it. It's like whenever I do like a film analysis of like a college prospect, I've had people call me out for like hedging my bets. And it's like, of course I am, because I don't have a crystal ball. It's like, hey, if this stuff holds up, then that looks good. If it doesn't, and not so much. Like, this isn't hard to do. And I don't understand how anyone who has watched the Chiefs from the outside in for the last year has not seen what a petty, petty, petty group of humans that they admitted to reading Twitter to get motivation.
Two things.
That's like
two things, Josh. Did Tyreek Hill say the phrase bulletin board material today in the most hilarious manner that I've ever heard the phrase uttered?
And now, for anyone who didn't hear that, can you go ahead and just give us sort of how you heard it?
What they call that, huh? What they call that? Bulletin board material?
He added syllables. It was strange.
He's having fun.
He also hates the media, but not
you
the guys
on the Zoom. Not you guys. I love you
not
guys.
Not you guys on the Zoom.
You guys didn't say know that? Me. You know, but
yeah. Yeah, that also happened. Yeah.
Can we acknowledge that? In the middle of the game, while they were, you know, curb stomping the Bills on offense.
Yeah, they were.
Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce were like, they must have forgotten about us. And I'm like, who has forgotten y'all? But, you know, it's good to know that that's what they're using to get back to the Super Bowl. And I can't wait to hear what happens if they win as to, like, what, you know, sort of how they were doubted, even though they're the betting favorite by, you know, standard. Back-to-back title contenders. I don't know what they're going to use, Josh, but they're going to use something. And that's the most interesting thing, honestly, is like what is going to be said over the next 7 days to where these people, you know, get a little, you know, they dig really deep to find whatever could come out. Because I think it was smart of Scotty Miller to do this early, because I'm sure he had a nice little chit chat with Tom Brady after the fact, and ain't nobody gonna do that, or they shouldn't moving forward. But we have really reached the semantic part of the of Super Bowl preparation, where hey, what they call that? He literally asked what they call that, and then said what it was. So just hilarious.
I just this is I. This was literally like the whole press conference today. If you're thinking like, why are they spending so much? It's all we got today. It was basically this conversation over and over again. Chris Jones, and listen, Chris Jones may be listening to this podcast right now, but Chris Jones saying that he reads everything. I know you mentioned this already, Nate, but saying that he's out here, he sees every tweet, he's reading everything. We know Tyrann Mathieu. You look at Tyrann Mathieu's tweets after the game, he's quote tweeting people who have used his name and have not tagged him. So like, these dudes are out, they are absolutely out here looking for it. Like, we've talked about this on the show before. I joked about this on Twitter, that the fact that Chris Jones reads everything that he sees on Twitter and then takes it all very personally means that Chris Jones and I have at least one thing in common. And that's, you know, based on a true story. but even in the last, like, I don't know, and within the last year maybe, I've kind of just been able to, like, pare down the number of notifications I get whenever someone is tweeting me about any number of annoying things simply by muting Seth. Like, that took a huge chunk out of it. But, like, that's a joke, Seth. I'm sorry. Are you still here? Are you mad at me?
No, it's fine. Whatever. I'm just the punching bag. Okay.
Are you tweeting again?
I was reading about GameStop.
Which was also mentioned today. Not referenced directly, but was alluded to by who, Josh?
By Patrick Mahomes alluded to it.
Patrick Mahomes should buy GameStop. That would be like one way to really like blow up the internet right now.
This is not financial advice. Sorry, I'm here to protect you, Seth. That is not financial advice to Patrick Mahomes. If he did do it, it would be really cool for a bunch of us. I mean, for a bunch of people. Maybe not, including me. With my two shares of GameStop stock. Can I publicly disclose that? Did I need to get bleeped out? I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Danielle's gonna be like redacted.
That's fine. Yeah, I wonder if people will be able to guess what meme stock I currently own two shares of. Well, yeah, that'll be a real curveball, but we'll keep them guessing. God, it's just the fact though that like he, like Chris Jones and Tyrann Mathieu both very clearly are like looking for that stuff on the internet is wild, because that's not healthy for, like, at least most people. And if it's working for them, I mean, good, go for it. But that is a crazy thing to think about, just how many tweets they have to be getting at all times. And to say that you see all of them, that's a part-time job.
I'm here for it, man. I'm here for all the petty. I'm here for all the hyperbole. I have read every negative tweet about me over the last 5 years. And I just, like, it was so hard for me. Like, you know, I saw that. And I was so tempted to, like, I'm going to start adding him. I'm going to be that person. I'm going to at him when people criticize him, which I hate that people do that, because these athletes get enough crap as it is. But I love that they use it as motivation, because you have to, grab onto stuff. There's a reason MJ was the way he was, because after they won a couple in a row, and he was very clearly the best player that the NBA had ever seen. Like, everyone knew it. You know, like in 92, like they were like trying to fashion up like this Clyde Drexler.
Hey, Clyde type. Drexler.
Yeah. Yeah. Clyde. You know, Clyde does everything MJ does. And you know what, Nate? He shoots the three ball. He shoots the three ball like MJ can't. MJ can't do it. And, you know, Clyde might be a little better on defense. And then, I mean, you look for things to motivate you. And then MJ, seriously, that might go down in time as maybe the greatest evisceration of a supposed rival in history.
In 24 minutes, he murdered a man.
It was so mean. And Clyde was like barely hitting the backboard on his shot. It was bad. But you need to grab at those things. I've read a bunch of books on those Jordan Bulls, because that's when I was like a really big NBA fan. I was more a Jordan fan. And he talks about that. There's a reason why he grabbed onto that stuff. Even like Scottie Pippen has been quoted on that. And he wasn't nearly as insane as Michael was, because he just wasn't. But like, even Dennis Rodman, who was insane, but in a different way,
was insane.
But they grab onto things, because eventually when you've won, like you, it's hard to grab onto stuff anymore. Like, it's hard to find that same emotional oomph, because you've been to the top of the mountain, and so you got to start seeing enemies everywhere. And I'm here for it, guys. I'm here for it if they win it all again, and I think they've got a good chance. I'm here for it when they come in next year and they're just like, nobody believes in us. It's like, you're going through it for a three-peat, guys. Everyone believes in you right now. And I'm just here for it, because people are going to get mad, and it's just the next phase of going from like villain to super villain.
Yeah. Villain to supervillain is not a bad way of putting it. You've written about it up in the Chief of the North newsletter, so I'm just sort of like the villainous role and you know, as you said earlier, curb stomping some excellent fan bases. That evolution is happening now. One thing though that I would like to talk about is sort of a you know, the Thursday before the actual beginning of the real Super Bowl week. Something that you and I talked about a little bit on 810 this week, Seth, and something I've seen pop up in a couple places. I'm certainly not going to be the first one to bring this up, but I do think it's really interesting. Whenever you look at sort of, you know, you mentioned Jordan, you mentioned the narratives about being a villain and all of that. Whenever you look at what the legacy of this team, and more specifically Patrick Mahomes, is going to be, this Super Bowl is going to have an outsized impact on what that will ultimately be in retrospect. Yep. Because you're either going to have Tom Brady winning his seventh ring and one of them in a head-to-head direct matchup with Patrick Mahomes, which basically counts for double, right? If he ends with seven, but Mahomes ends with seven, but Tom Brady gave Patrick Mahomes his first two playoff losses and took two rings from him in 2 years, like those are all going to get mixed up altogether because we didn't get LeBron's first final. If someone else said it this way, and so I apologize for just straight up feeling this, I can't remember who it was. But instead of losing to the Mavericks, if LeBron's first title would have been losing to the Jordan Wizards, that would have changed the narrative around those dudes forever. And we're kind of getting that. Brady never had to beat Montana in a Super Bowl. And this would be such an interesting, and it's gonna be such an interesting, unique case study where that is actually.
You know whose fault that is? That's Tom Brady's fault. That's on you, sir. If you would have just stopped being so dang great at football and retired 5 years ago, we wouldn't have this problem. You see what Peyton Manning did? Yeah. Peyton Manning won, and he got up out. He got up out of there.
Yep.
He saw these young whippersnappers was coming. It's the greedy, petty ones like Tom Brady who can't help themselves. From stop playing. So it's on Tom Brady's fault, and shout out to Nick Wright, because that's who mentioned it. You're welcome.
Thank you.
And Tom deserves all the credit in the world for understanding, you know, I think he saw what happened last year in New England. He saw he's no longer a quarterback that can, you know, drag a bad offense to being very good and a good offense to being great. But what he can do is join a team with a really good offensive-minded coach, a good offensive line, great receivers, convince Gronk to come out of retirement and get into shape again. Mm-hmm. And he can do those things, and they already had a great defense in place. He was smart. Like, if there weren't a situation like the Buccaneers available, I'm curious if Brady would have left New England or if maybe he just would have retired. Mm-hmm. Because winning matters to him. A lot. This dude would not have left New England to go to even like, I don't think, Indy or something like that. Because I don't think it's a coincidence he also ended up in the NFC. Tom Brady's not dumb. he's just not. And I think with Indy, they've got a perfectly good roster, but their defense isn't nearly as good. And I think he's a smart guy. I think he understands how this works. And so the legacy stuff, some of the things you're saying, Josh, I'm sure there's some listeners that are like, well, that's not fair. Like that people would view it that way. I agree. It's stupid. Quarterbacks don't play other quarterbacks. But you know what? When you're talking about who the GOAT is, fair flies out the window. It's not going to be fair at all because you're picking nits. That's by definition what you're going to do. It's like every year, you know, after this year, I'm going to write about ways Patrick Mahomes can get better. What am I going to write about? I have no idea. Because everything I've written about the last two off seasons, he's gotten way better at, and I'm like, I don't know, he needs to be more petty, I guess. I don't have anything. I got nothing.
I got one suggestion for you, Seth. If this man learns how to slide, he unlocks the universe.
He really is bad at sliding. Kelsey's even commented on that. He's like,
he played baseball. That doesn't make any sense.
Learn how to slide, dude. Maybe because it's not dirt. I don't know. So I would just say, I mean, they're not fair. It's not a fair analysis, but it's what people are going to say. And when you're talking about GOAT arguments, majority rules. That's it. It's not about who has the best argument. It's about what the majority says. And if Brady getting to seven, it would make it really hard for Mahomes to catch him. It'll be really hard to catch six. Yep. Yeah. But if he's got two, you know, you're a third of the way there. That's an important number, according to Troy Aikman. See, we're petty on Times Ours, just
Troy
like Patrick
Aikman
Mahomes.
Thought he could live another day.
I just want to say, I never heard from him. He said to talk to him then, and I tried. Man, I'm sure he's very busy. I did retweet his, he's doing some sort of sponsorship with an avocado company, and I did retweet that just so people can make Troy Aikman's delicious guacamole. That was an olive branch. It was just an olive branch. See, I was just reaching out. I'm trying to unite, you know, in these divided times.
That's kind
times.
Of you. And the legacy stuff.
I need to make Troy Aikman's guacamole at some point.
That might help. I have no choice. But what if you make it and you hate it?
Step by step video evidence of this and get.
No, I'm gonna have to film and make.
Pull
this.
Pull Martha Stewart out there. Get her to compliment you on the execution. You know.
Man,
nah, this is gonna happen.
I just want to let you know, Josh, that the people on Twitter have a lot of things they want me to say to you right now.
Mm.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Time of possession matters.
You said that. We have that
every team that took a running back in the first round made the Super Bowl.
Sure did. That's true.
Ask him why he spells his last name wrong.
That one hurts. You know what? The first two, that one.
I'm only responding to take up airtime and see Josh's podcast schedule crushed again. All right. Let Seth cook. Okay. All right. Time of possession is key. All right. We'll be done with all this. I know we got a ton of stuff to talk about, but legacy stuff really is important. This is like.
Do we?
One of the things that got mentioned by Therese Paylor and Charles Robinson on their podcast, which is always great. Therese can say things that I can't say because he's cooler than I am, and I accept this because Therese is cooler than a lot of us. But he said that this is the dopest Super Bowl matchup that you could imagine this year. And see, you agree. I can't say that. Like, that's just not. It's not in my milieu of movies.
Hey man, this is the dopest Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh. It's like he's on the call.
Nate, that is so scary, man. Seriously.
Tom Brady.
It's just like he's here with.
I love the way he says Tom Brady when he gets excited.
He does. Oh, my gosh. But
All love, sir. We love you.
Yes. Yeah. Therese is the best. He was kind to me when I was, you know, a blogger that had no idea about anything. And I mean, he's just been great. That is so dead on. It's frightening. But. Legacy-wise, this is the best Super Bowl you could ask for. It's a fun matchup, too, so it really is. I probably would have preferred, in terms of matchup, probably Rodgers versus Mahomes. I think that's the only thing that I might have maybe preferred, but this is going to be awesome, too. And I think the Chiefs have a better chance to beat the Buccaneers than they do the Packers.
That's where I'm coming from with this.
Interesting.
How many interceptions did Tom Brady throw against the Chiefs? I believe it was two.
Yes, sir.
How many interceptions did he throw against the Packers? It was three.
Yeah. There's
going to be chances for interceptions to be had if the Chiefs secondary plays up to what they're capable of. But that Rodgers performance against the Rams, I was sort of like, they may not even need to play next week. And then he wasn't as good, you know, which is why they play the games, kids. They schedule them, they show up, they play. You sometimes get weird outcomes that weren't really your fault because the coach made some questionable decisions.
Yes. Well, and let me just here. I'll make my first bold prediction as we start to move towards Super Bowl coverage. Although there's still things about the Bills game I'd love to talk about. But first bold prediction. If Tom Brady throws three picks, the Chiefs are, I'm going to go with 99.99999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 team. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Neither one of us disagree with you, it seems. It seems like we may be on the same page on that one, my friend.
Our podcast is so much more boring.
If Tom Brady turns the ball over three times, that's true. That's a good point. We should, you know what? I think that Tom Brady throws three picks and the Buccaneers will automatically win because that happened last week. He threw three picks and the Buccaneers won. It's a sure bet.
It's just like time of possession.
It's exactly right.
They're just long.
The team that runs the ball.
They're
more
just long
wins.
Punts. I mean, what do you want? You know, keeping his punter fresh out there.
They're just early long punts.
I'll give a different type of prediction unless you want to actually quarterback, Josh.
Well, I was going to ask, actually, I want to know what else from the Bills game you still wanted to get to. The one thing that I thought we might talk about a little bit today that will have a very, very real impact going forward into the Super Bowl is, we mentioned the defense a little bit, but you specifically wrote about Warren Thornhill in the Chief of the North newsletter, and I know you've got a bigger piece coming on the Chiefs defense to the Athletic here pretty soon, maybe by the time that people are listening to this podcast. I have not had the privilege of reading it yet, but you may be able to now. So yeah, I actually did want to see what jumped out to you, because we gave a little bit of a conversation around Thornhill after the game, that he looked really good, but was he as good as he looked sort of from the broadcast view? And then you can segue that into your larger piece coming in the Athletic, if you like, as well.
He wasn't as good as he looked in the broadcast. He was better.
Woo!
Boom! Yep. he was flying around the field. Anyone who has NFL Game Pass and has the ability to check out the All-22, do yourself a favor. Go watch the All-22 film of the Week 12 matchup, Tampa Bay and Kansas City. Watch a couple of the big plays that got given up specifically. A few of them, a couple of big plays, mind you, like long yardage plays, were on Juan Thornhill, and watch him try to get deep. Watch him get run around by Ronald Jones. Just watch how he's moving around the field. Then go turn on the AFC Championship. Dude looks like a different player. Like, and you never know, you know, injuries are weird, right? Like, he feeling physically clearly felt awesome again against the Bills. Hopefully that keeps up. Let me just tell you, though, he looked great. He slammed the window shut on a few throws after. I mean, that early pass breakup, the pick that he dropped against Cole Beasley, I was so bummed that he dropped the pick that I didn't really think about the coverage. Man, he had to change direction to go from covering a flat to a wheel
route,
while Beasley had a head start on him. Yeah, it was a great route. And he just outran him. He ran the route better. He's just like, no, I'm too athletic. It was such great coverage. And so, I mean, Thornhill looked amazing. And that kind of, you know, leads me into, you're going to read all about it in the article.
Actually, Seth, I'm reading about it right now.
Oh, is it up?
The tweet with the link went out while you were talking about Juan Thornhill. So I just cracked it open. It's definitely up for everyone right now.
There's a lot in there, so I won't get into it now. But like, I guess I'll start with this. If the Chiefs defense plays as well as it did against the Bills, I won't go to like the infinite nines like I did on Brady throwing three picks. But I think if it plays as well as they played against the Bills, I think the Chiefs are about a 99% team to win. Because I just don't think I don't think Tom is in a place anymore where he can force things enough to score 30 against the defense playing like that, like when it matters. And one thing worth noting, Josh Allen hadn't even thrown for 200 yards until garbage time.
Yeah.
And when I say garbage time, we're talking 7 minutes left and they're down by three touchdowns. It was over. That game was so over. And they just did so many things. Juan Thornhill being back allowed Spagnuolo to do things a little differently. Like, you know, I don't know, play cover zero or just cover one with one safety over the top and no one else, and knowing that it could be covered and then sending the house. He also was able to disguise coverages that initially looked like they're going to be running some kind of standard cover two, and then shifted into man coverage with four guys and blitzing seven dudes. I mean, they rotated guys all over the field. It was really impressive. Now, Brady's not going to be dazzled by that the way Allen was, but Brady also isn't going to escape from another four or five sacks like Josh Allen did. And so they're playing good. You know who else was flying all over the field? Anthony Hitchens.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. He looks as good as he's looked as a Chief. Looks like he's moving super well. I mean, they just played really, really well. And I mean, they might be getting Willie Gay back. Yes. I can't say enough about how well the secondary played. It was such complimentary football. You know, the pass rush was better than it's been. But the secondary, man, and Romo talked about this during the broadcast, and it was like an every snap thing. He's not even able to throw it to. Like Josh Allen just they covered so well for the first 3 seconds of every snap that Allen ended up under pressure way more than you would think. And so it was an awesome performance by the defense.
I have a usage question for you that I honestly, like, this just sort of slipped past me until yesterday. I think it came up when we were talking about it on 810. Rudy and I were talking about it. But I was wishing, I was like, oh, I wish I would have asked Seth about this on Tuesday, but I have you now. Tyrann Mathieu and Dan Sorensen both played 100% of the snaps. Tre'Varius Ward and Bashaud Breeland played all but 1 and 3 of the snaps, respectively. And then L'Jarius Sneed played 66% of the snaps. Obviously, still got a lot of work. But Thornhill, you know, we've talked about how good he looked. He played 77% of the snaps, mm-hmm. which is a big chunk, but he was clearly the third safety there. Yep. So I'm just curious, if, and you may not even have an answer for this. I really don't know. I'm putting you on the spot. But what do you make of how that usage split was getting put out there? Because here's my thought process. Is that whenever Thornhill is playing, he is, at least at full health, the best free safety of the group. Yes. Or at least acknowledging that you'd rather have Mathieu doing other things, right? And that he's a better free safety than Sorensen. And it seemed like he was in that role a decent amount of the time. So was Sorensen just always on the field, but then he would move up into a different role whenever Thornhill would come in, or was Thornhill getting moved around? How did that end up playing out? And I guess, Nate, if you have any info on it, I'd love that from both of you guys.
Sure. So Sorensen played multiple roles. He played more roles than Thornhill did. And Sorensen, his utility gets a little bit underrated because he's not great at certain things. And there are certain roles you don't want him in. But if you have him close to the line of scrimmage or play him in a hybrid linebacker role in coverage, he's a plus defender because most linebackers who are put in the positions he's put in aren't as fast as he is, right? Yes, he's a better coverage guy than almost any other linebackers, than any linebacker is going to be. And so they moved him around to do that. They asked him to play cover 2 and sometimes asked him to be like the middle safety when they're playing like a variant of cover 3 or something. Almost never single high, which is good. You don't want him doing that.
Because there was a pocket of time this year where he was playing some single high.
Yes, and that's not his best use at all. And so what I would say is this. I think in part, they just really trust Sorensen to know every single part of the defense. But they are comfortable moving him around all over. And so basically when Thornhill would come in would be, you know, in these various, and everyone has different terminologies, whether you want to call it like a, you know, some version of nickel, some version of dime. They were using him in that hybrid safety linebacker role and then sliding in Thornhill as a pure safety. So that's what I saw. And it's a good way to use them. I would hope next year, if Thornhill gets fully healthy, he's going to be the guy taking 100% of the snaps. But I can't help but wonder if at this point they're like, man, Thornhill's feeling good. What we're doing's working. There's no reason to get too crazy here when we got one game left.
Yeah. The other thing, and then I'll kick it to you, Nate, but Hitchens played 70% of the snaps. A little low for your, you know, always on the field, Mike linebacker, dude with the green dot, you know. But he got 70% of the snaps. Next up was Ben Neiman at 37% of the snaps. Damian Wilson had 16% of the snaps. And those are the only linebackers that play. There were a couple of clips that I saw that got tweeted out later that I was looking closer. And I actually think it might have even been GIFs from the newsletter, Seth, where I was kind of doing a little look around saying, oh, that's Sorensen. And then are there any linebackers on the field right now? Or like there's Hitchens and Sorensen. And that's it, isn't it? They were doing a whole lot of very light defensive packages from the back seven, it looked like.
Yeah, and some of that, of course, is because of the Bills' personnel,
yep.
Which you have to account for just because Absolutely. They want to pass the ball more on first down than, say, what Cleveland did in the divisional round. So it's understandable.
And those snap counts were very different from how they looked against Cleveland, absolutely.
So one thing that I was just super fascinated in, and it's something that gives you the benefit of being in the press box, obviously, because you're watching the Live 22. You're kind of understanding like what each coach is thinking about as each sort of piece on the chessboard kind of moves. On a lot of these pre-snap plays from the defensive side, and I'm sure you noticed this, Seth, but it was almost like Tyrann Mathieu wasn't asked to do a ton post-snap, but pre-snap. His entire job was to get into Josh Allen's head. And it was it was really fascinating because he's like, okay, I'm over here. No. I'm gonna, I don't know. Maybe I'm dropping back. You don't know. I don't even know. And it was very fun to just sort of watch that play out, particularly in the first half, because like you're mentioning, Daniel Sorensen is kind of coming down in that, like, you know, our, you know, maybe 8-2 spot on the however far you're off the line of scrimmage. But man, there are times where Tyrann Mathieu is deep. There's times where he's in the middle. There's times where it's like, I'm blitzing. Hey, I'm blitzing. And Josh is like, but man, like, you're not really blitzing. Oh my God, he's really blitzing. And so I don't know how much of that works with obviously a young quarterback in his first championship game versus Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting to know that, like, and I think Tyrann even alluded to this after the game, where he's like, hey, my job was a little less, there was a little less asked of me versus maybe Cleveland because, you know, they're playing a little bit more tight end heavy. You obviously have to wonder where the running backs are and all of this. Like, their route concepts are completely different from Buffalo. Whereas if Snead, Ward, Bashaud Breeland, and I know I got, you know, Juan on the back end, I can kind of give all these certain looks. I can communicate in a different way than maybe they are not aware of. And then when the snap happens, oh, I just have to tight end. That's just my job on the snap. Where it doesn't necessarily look that way, you know, as someone's motioning across the formation or they're maybe shifting, you know, on the Bill side of it. So it's fun to know that, like, Tyron's gotten to this point now where he can just kind of do whatever he wants just because the secondary behind him is so good, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Seth, I'm admittedly kind of skimming the story right now because I'm also trying to, you know, co-host a podcast. So it's really a degree of difficulty on this is not great for me. But you have some stuff specifically about what they were doing in some third downs and how they were messing with Josh mm-hmm. Allen and showing him some different things. I, without getting to the full end of this story, that is a concept that's very interesting to me. Did that jump out to you as well, then, I imagine?
The different things they were doing on third down?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, just your phrasing confused me there. And can so...
That's fine. I'm trying... My reading comprehension while talking is dangerously...
No, you're fine. You're fine. I was following you for a second, then I was like, wait, what? Like, and that's okay. I was Josh...
I was also tweeting.
Yeah. I was Josh Allen trying to figure out if Tyrann Mathieu's blitzing. Like, well, he's going to throw it to me now. No, not yet, but in a minute. Wait, what did he say first?
Here's a great example. I just want to say, here's a great example, because I'm actually looking at it right now on the All 22. I think it's first down, if my memory is correct. If it's first down, second quarter, Chiefs are starting to obviously make a run, and the Bills are like, cool, three wideouts, here we go. Here's how it plays out in Josh Allen's mind. Okay, I know what I have. This is single high with Tyrann Mathieu as the deep safety. All of a sudden, Dan Sorensen comes down to Cole Beasley, and it's like, cool, I guess he's got Cole Beasley, right? No.
Yep.
Tyrann Mathieu comes all the way across, kind of does this diagonal thing. Now we in two deep with Dan Sorensen as the other two deep safety. So now you're thinking, okay, two deep man. It's not two deep man. And it's this is the play where Tre'Davious Ward should have had an interception because he gives the impression of man by his press coverage, but he sort of shades back. And Josh Allen never sees him. So, again, this is some of the explanation of, wait, you were supposed to be here, but now it's too deep. Okay, when I've seen that before, that means too deep man. Holy crap, that ain't too deep man. I almost threw a pick. So that's how good they got when they really needed to be at their best, obviously as the Chiefs offense was sort of, you know, going into supernova mode. But this, all these little things that they're doing where – I think by October, they weren't moving nearly as much in the back end on pre-snap stuff where they're doing now. And it helps because they played the Buffalo Bills in October where they did less of this than they did in the AFC Championship game. Continue, right. Seth.
It's worth noting that they really gave Josh Allen trouble in that first matchup, too. Mm-hmm. Spagnuolo's a good defensive coordinator. I'm so curious what he has in store for Brady. It's worth noting also, in the first half, they really, like, the Bucs could not move the ball on them in that Week 12 matchup. And then in the second half, they did a lot better job with their protection, started picking up some of those blitzes, and started to move the ball a little bit. You nailed it, Nate. Like, with all that movement, And that's something that they were doing on a lot of snaps. And then one of the other things, you know, Josh, talking about third down, I made sure to show two different third and long plays where they played it totally different. You know, on one, you've got them playing, that you've got them rushing four and dropping seven into a basically a mixed coverage where you've got two guys playing or three guys playing man. You've got zone in the interior. It's one thing I've been meaning to talk about for a while, and I'm not going to get too deep in the woods because it's out of my depth. Mm-hmm. It really, just calling things cover three, cover two, cover one, or man or zone, in today's world of mixed and pattern match coverages,
yes,
is not super accurate.
It's a simplified way of saying it.
Absolutely.
It's Madden version.
Right, it's Madden version. You're often going to see the Chiefs play variants. You're going to see the Chiefs playing zone on one side of the field while they've got one guy matched up on the other side of the field. And the beauty of the Chiefs is that they are comfortable matching up their corners with anyone. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, look, they other than Snead, who I think has superstar potential, like legitimate superstar. I'm trying not to get too excited. I've been hurt before. But man, that kid looks good. They don't, you know, Breland, Ward, and Fenton. Breland's probably the one I would trust the most on a star receiver unless he's got like track speed, right? But they trust those guys to where they trust any of them on an island. Any of four guys. That's unusual at the NFL level, right? And so they are able to mix and match things. And it's when you look at these two different third downs that I wrote about here, on one, they'll send four, play kind of a little bit of a zone on the interior, matching man on the outside. And then on the next one, it's a third and long, same thing. And this time they load seven guys in the box and then send them all while playing pure man on the four receivers that the Bills have out there. It's just incredible how much they mix and match.
You may have heard me say excellent point, Seth, somewhere in there, because we lost you, but you kept going. And so I think this is all in the podcast. I'm sure that was great analysis, Seth.
Thank you. That's what I thought was happening. So I powered through.
It worked out. I guess. I mean, I imagine. I don't know. You could have said something and you're like, yeah, and then Breland Speaks busted up through the middle and hit Matt Barkley right in the pocket. And we would have no way of correcting you. Let me ask you guys about this then. Because if this is sort of the theme of today's show, it goes well with what you wrote, Seth, and it means we don't have to talk about, the Chiefs reading Twitter for a full hour. So I'll kind of have you guys pivot this direction, if you will. There's a lot of stuff there that I think sounds like Spags putting on a clinic against Josh Allen, and bothering him in a way where Josh Allen is neither a rookie nor is he stupid. Like he is a younger quarterback, and Spags showed him a lot of stuff. He's also not Tom Brady in terms of knowing what he's looking at and then being able to diagnose, and not just diagnose, but exploit it. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Spags would tell you that his best scheme has a weak spot somewhere, and Tom Brady is typically really, really good at exploiting that unless you pressure him up the middle in 0.1 seconds, which maybe Chris Jones can say something about. But I'm curious what you guys are thinking then in terms of, you know, all the success that the defense had here for all of these reasons and how great the coverage was and how the schemes varied and they even varied in different situations or in similar situations. I mean, it seems like a real gold star game for Spags in the AFC Championship game, but the test is going to be very, very different for Brady. So what are you guys expecting in terms of what will translate and what won't? I imagine the personnel stuff, Seth, you know, you would still say they'll trust those guys against an even more talented Bucs receiving core, but how much will and how much won't translate?
I think that you're going to see what I think will translate is the personnel stuff, the improvements of Juan Thornhill. That's a big deal. Again, I encourage every Chiefs fan to look at that Week 12 matchup, and that is huge. I cannot overstate. Well, I mean, I could overstate like the impact. Like it literally
changed the world. Yeah,
it'll
forever.
Literally guarantee victory. But it changes so much about what they can do on defense. I think with Tom, what I would like to see them do, and this is what's interesting, they talk a lot about the Chiefs sending the house constantly against the Bills, but they actually mixed it up fairly well. There were snaps where they were just sending four and dropping guys. And I think you're going to see more of that against Tom, because here's one thing with Tom is that, you know,
I like how you know him on a first name basis. I've really enjoyed the number of times you've just called him Tom.
Tommy
boy. Hey, Tommy.
Yeah, just Tom. It's just a guy you've known for 10 years.
So, yeah, I guess. I'm just comfortable with everyone. I'm the world's friend. So, with Brady, sorry.
You can, I didn't need to say anything. Yeah. I just thought it was kind of funny.
I'm self-conscious. I just wanted to point it out. And so now I just can't do it anymore.
You should call him Tom.
For Mr. Thomas Brady.
What's his middle name?
I don't know. Otherwise, I'd have added it because I'm a jerk. But, so...
Hold on at this point. I'm going to interrupt. Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr.
Of course.
Did you guys know he was a junior?
He would be. I'm surprised he's not a third.
Thomas Edward Patrick Brady the third would be.
That would be epic.
That would be a tough matchup. Yeah,
that actually. That would be intimidating.
Fear in your heart.
Yeah, it really does.
So
his dad will beat you up. But I guess in this case, his dad is Tom Brady. So that's true.
Yeah, that is true. And so there's with Brady, the thing has always been if you can pressure him, and this is true of a lot of quarterbacks, but some are less, they're not bothered by it as much, and you bother them in different ways, right? With Patrick Mahomes, you try to get him to leave the pocket early, and then you spy him really well, right? There's just different things that bother different quarterbacks. Very few things bother Mahomes, but it's the closest thing to an example I have. With Brady, in games where he gets hit and knocked around, he can be bothered. He does not just keep coming. And so what they really need to do is find ways to get Jones in one-on-one matchups,
because
that interior line cannot handle him. So they need to line him up a little bit wide, do things like that. And they need to pick their spots with blitzes while making sure that they've got tough coverage up front to keep Tom from just getting these easy dinks and dunks. They're going to really want to mind the running backs as well, because I think Tom will do a better job. See, we're back to Tom utilizing his running backs.
What do you think, Nate?
I think a lot of this will come down kind of to what has been mentioned earlier with Juan Thornhill. But I think Bashaud Breeland will be a massive player because he had an interception in the first matchup. He does, physically... give the Chiefs a chance against Mike Evans. And it was so clear in the NFC Championship that Mike Evans was physically better than everybody in the Packers secondary. And so it was a matter of could Tom hit him accurately. Now, there were some issues there at times, but the first touchdown pass was kind of the matchup of the day, which was, hey, that dude's taller and stronger and faster than y'all. So, like, let's throw to him in the red zone. If they can, it'll be fascinating to know, because we'll know more information like a week from now, what's going on with Antonio Brown and sort of his knee situation, because that sort of puts a lot of dependence on someone like Scotty Miller, of course. Again, Scotty Miller, Legarius Sneed, a matchup that is in football Super Bowl heaven? Anyway, this is kind of off my point. But Bashaud Breeland, though, is really fascinating to me, because if he holds up well, that could force Tom to hold the ball, obviously, half second longer. Could help Chris Jones, Frank Clark, Alex Okafor. People forget Alex Okafor had a sack against the Buccaneers. So I'm sort of acknowledging some of the B stars, the B letter guys on the defense. Guys like Bashaud
Breeland. Hit Josh Allen a few times, too.
Yeah. Guys like Bashaud Breeland, guys like Alex Okafor, because I assume, wisely, they should double-team Chris Jones. You see if you can get away with Frank Clark on some chips, on some one-on-one matchups, depending on where you are in the down and the distance. And it really does come down to, can Alex Okafor get some hits, some pressures? The last two times he's played Tom Brady, he has gotten a sack in both of those games, or a sack in each of those games, I should say. And look, if you make Tom throw deep into tight windows, I still think the advantage is Chiefs, even though Mike Evans can, just snatch a ball from you. If given the opportunity, I like Chris Godwin. He's kind of been high and low very much in the playoffs so far. I think Tre'Davious Ward had his best game of the season. I don't know how against the Bills. I don't know how translatable that will be against the Buccaneers. Excuse me, but I do think for all the things Seth just mentioned, two players to keep an eye on are Bashaud Breeland and Alex Okafor, with a sprinkle, just a sprinkle of Willie Gay. Just a sprinkle. Mm-hmm. He's trending in a positive direction based on this practice injury report, theoretical and realistic. Just a sprinkle of Willie Gay.
Yep, just a sprinkle. And you can't forget, there's going to be two huge plays by Dan Sorensen. One that makes us say, holy cow, how... Yep. And then I fully expect him to, whatever it's going to be, I expect the Chiefs to bring him in on 4th and 20 as an emergency wide receiver and, like, you know, throw a bomb to him or something. There's almost nothing Dan Sorensen could do at this point to shock me. So I look forward to him doing it anyway.
Dan Sorensen, yeah, I mean, Scotty Miller, 3rd and gotta have it 12.
Oh.
Who wins?
Oh my gosh. Oh, that hurts so much.
What, when in the game is it?
Fourth quarter, 4 minutes on the clock.
Dirty Dan.
Third and oh, gotta have it 12.
I will take you, yeah. You give me Dan Sorensen against peak Randy Moss with 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
That's right. That's right. But Dan Sorensen is lined
Sorensen
up.
Sorensen whose hand is raising up, not Randy Moss's. Absolutely.
But if it's in the first quarter, you line Dan Sorensen up in the slot against me, and I'm betting on myself. Yeah. But in the fourth quarter,
he is a man who giveth and taketh away.
Also, I should note that there was a report, I believe Diana Russini had this first, that both Le'Veon Bell and Sammy Watkins are expected back. I think we supposed as much last episode. If not, we've definitely tweeted about it and stuff. But that's something else to keep an eye on. Sounds like Willie Gay, Sammy Watkins, Le'Veon Bell could all be returning. Having Watkins back will be nice, and that's something that I bet we'll talk about next episode, but this is the end of this one. In fact, I think next week's first episode, we may do a little Super Bowl mailbag, so you can tweet. Here's what I'll ask. Please, please, please. We get tweets every time, and it's so hard to keep track of all of them. If you tweet at least me, at JB Briscoe, because I'll compile them all, please also use the hashtag TimesOurs. TimesOurs, or Time Sours, if that's easier. If you use that hashtag and you tag me, at JB Briscoe, I'll be able to compile all those and bring them that way. I'll tweet about it as a reminder sometime this weekend or early next week, and you can send them in there as well. But if you come up with a question in the next couple days, tweet at JB Briscoe, use the hashtag Time Sours, and you'll officially submit your question. Can't guarantee that we'll read it, but you can definitely guarantee that I will see it, and it'll be submitted into the pool. You can also read more from Seth, not just a new story up on The Athletic right now, but go check that one out first. Then you can go check out the Chief of the North newsletter as well, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Nate, you're going to be headed to Tampa before too terribly long, and you can follow Nate on Twitter for all the reports all the way up through the Super Bowl at By Nate Taylor. How'd I do, guys? Anything else?
You did great, but just know.
Thanks, Nate.
Just know, place your prop bets on Scotty Miller and Dan Sorensen. Start it now!